You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. We hope that your day is off to a great start. Cool temperatures today, a lot of sunshine though, so hopefully we can dry some things out across the state of Wisconsin. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Don't forget, we have some new social media pages. We'd love you to go and follow them on Instagram and Facebook. It is Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You can download all our podcasts on Spotify. Same handle. Why would we change our name? That would be confusing. So it's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie there. If you want to watch the show as opposed to just listening to it, you're like, oh, their voices are so soothing and beautiful. I wonder what their faces look like. Well, then, by all means, YouTube and Facebook, we are streaming on both of those platforms every morning. So check that out. And yes, Parker, we do need to tell people to download the free Civic Media app.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Perhaps you're somewhere where you don't have access to the radio or your TV or your computer. Now you can take us everywhere.
You can.
Invasive? Perhaps. But it's up to you to decide where you turn us on.
We're just making you more informed individuals. That's what we're trying to do.
Access is key, and information, knowledge is power, and all the other. Reading is fundamental.
That's right.
All the other platitudes.
That's right.
Time for some headlines from the Iran war. The United Arab Emirates announced Tuesday it will leave OPEC effective May 1st, stripping the oil cartel of one of its largest producers. While the announcement doesn't change anything regarding the blockage of the Strait of Hormuz, it could help lower oil prices after the war if the UAE increases its production capacity. Brent crude oil traded over 50% higher than its pre-war price yesterday.
Also in headlines from the Middle East, the U.S. military said Tuesday in a social media post that it boarded and released a commercial ship in the Arabian Sea east of the Strait of Hormuz that was suspected of heading for Iran. The command said that it has now redirected 39 vessels since the start of the blockade on ships going to and from Iranian ports.
And finally, Iran offered to end its chokehold on the strait if the U.S. lifts its blockade on the country and ends the war in a proposal that would postpone discussions on the Islamic Republic's nuclear program. That, according to two regional officials, U.S. President Donald Trump seems unlikely to accept the offer, however, and U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio appeared to rule out any deal that excludes Iran's nuclear program. And just a reminder, we did have a nuclear deal before, correct, Jamie?
Yes. Okay. A very good one.
And the strait was open?
It was. And with the nuclear deal, it was one that Iran was actually following. And there were inspections, and they were doing everything they needed to do to uphold that particular deal. So,
well, then, by all means, let's go get them. All right. Well, those are headlines from the war. Now let's turn our attention to other you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Yes. Well, speaking of the war, Pete Hegseth faces a second day of hearings today. He is going to get grilled again by Democrats on Capitol Hill. The senators are taking their shot at him today. They get their first opportunity to confront or praise the Pentagon chief over his handling of the war. If you watched any of his testimony in the House yesterday, depending on what side of the aisle the House member questioning him came from, he was either the second coming of every military genius known to man, or the most inept goofball who needed to resign that you've ever run into. I'll let you decide which side you want to put him on. But Hegseth battled with Democrats and a few Republicans yesterday during a nearly six-hour House Armed Services Committee hearing, where he faced sharp questioning over the war's costs in dollars, lives, and the diminishing stockpiles of critical weapons. And if you watched any of this, you saw he was as demure and full of courtesy and cooperation as all other Trump administration members that have had to testify in front of Congress. He was smug. He was arrogant. He was screaming at House members. But that's just Pete being Pete. The Armed Services Committee is going to hear a similar presentation on the Trump administration's 2027 military budget proposal, which would boost defense spending to a historic $1.5 trillion. Wow. Hegseth and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane, will again stress the need for more drones, missile defense systems, and warships. They're now also likely to face tough questions about American troop levels in Europe after President Donald Trump yesterday leveled a new threat against NATO ally Germany, suggesting he could soon reduce the U.S. military presence in the country as he feuds with Chancellor Friedrich Merz over the Iran war. Sidebar, that came after a 90-minute phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. 90-minute phone call with Putin, the same Putin whose country was giving our troop placements to Iran. Just so
ironic.
You know that. Yeah. I don't know if there's a connection. I'll let you decide. If the Senate hearing is similar to yesterday's in the House, Republican senators may focus on the details of military budgeting and voice support for the operation in Iran. Democrats, however, are expected to press for answers on strategy in the conflict, now in a tenuous ceasefire, and Hegseth's firing of top military leaders. He refused to answer questions on how much longer the war would last or how much more it would cost. When questioned about that, he immediately made Representative Ro Khanna was questioning him about the cost. And instead of answering, he just kept shouting, what is the cost of Iran having a nuclear weapon? What is the But then he also said that their nuclear capabilities had been obliterated.
Right.
Contradicting himself. So it has been same old song and dance for anybody.
It's always a
testifying
show
from the administration.
It's a show. That's essentially
yes.
What it is.
Very performative.
Their testimony usually has little substance or fact based with it. And because a lot of this administration is unqualified to hold the positions that they do, he was a weekend Fox anchor, right? That's what Pete Hegseth did. I mean, let's be realistic. He has some time in the National Guard, and he was a weekend anchor on Fox News. That is his qualifications for being in charge of the Department of Defense. So when you have to sit in front of senators and representatives who are fully prepared, who have fully analyzed, who understand the budgets, who understand the military, and they start asking you questions, it simply evolves into some sort of performance art is what happens.
Yes, and because every time he was asked about, you know, gas prices prior to the war and now,
right,
he would just scream, more in California, more in California. It's like, all
what?
Right, you're a child. You're a child. You're a not serious person. You are unqualified. You are ill-informed.
Right.
And you are nothing but another lapdog for the president.
I mean, it essentially goes back to the same arguments. And this is why, as you know, this administration started rolling out the cabinet and wanting to for the confirmations, why some Republicans who eventually did confirm these cabinet members,
sure,
but
did.
A lot of Democrats had so many reservations because it was because of these conversations right here. They mm-hmm. knew exactly what this was going to look like, and that you know, while some of these cabinet members may have been qualified to do something in the administration, they were probably very unqualified to be the head of some sort of cabinet and department. And that's essentially what we're seeing. And
yeah.
Here's the thing. I remember when Senate hearings used to be boring and nobody used to tune into
yes.
them. And I really miss those days. Like, I miss those days when it wasn't theater and nobody was talking about Senate hearings, because those are just a normal process of government.
And even when they were contentious, there was no screaming and yelling,
right?
and demonstrative stupidity. It was just debate.
Right.
But we don't have that, because to debate, you both sides need to have their facts. Both
right.
sides need to be well informed. And in these cases, one side is well informed, and whether you agree with the Republicans on the mm-hmm. committees or not, they're informed. The Democrats are informed. the people from this administration that sit before those committees are not.
Right.
They have a list of talking points, and God forbid you go any deeper with your questioning, you will expose them as the dolts that they are.
And they always come in, and this is fact, because photographers have gotten photos of them while in the room. They always come with a list of talking points in big bullets.
They're going to yell at,
yep,
targets.
These are proven facts. These are photos that have been proven to be sitting on the table in front of these cabinet members during these processes. And this is just how this administration works. But... I miss boring government. I miss boring government when they were just operating and we would get mad about a few different things. That's what I miss. But we've got to bring
it. Those times are long gone.
They are. Maybe
one day. Any
other S
we need to know?
Yes, there is a few things. In fact, we've got to bring it right back here to South Dakota, going back to my childhood roots because we were talking about that. Back to Wisconsin. The federal government is suing the state of Wisconsin. It's in response to a lawsuit that Wisconsin filed last week. Attorney General Josh Call is going after companies state officials believe are exploiting loopholes around gambling. Now, the lawsuit names five companies, including Kalshi, Polymarket, Robinhood, and Coinbase. Call says because those prediction markets let people make investments tied to the outcome of sporting events, it's basically a way around sports gambling laws. However, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission says, probably didn't know that was actually a thing, says that it is already regulating those companies. The agency argues Wisconsin's lawsuit is now interfering with federal law. The commission has filed similar lawsuits in response to actions other states have taken, including New York and Arizona. Okay, so here's my question. If this lawsuit is going to interfere with federal law, then why isn't federal law doing something to regulate it, right?
That
would be based on what the title of the commission is. You would think that that's what they were doing. Doesn't really seem like that's happening,
no,
considering what we're having. And this goes beyond sports betting, right?
It's everything.
We talked about the war, right? When bombs were going to drop in Iran.
Well, and it goes back. We talked about this last week when Josh Call filed this lawsuit, and it does the semantics that the companies are using, that they're not a bet, they are a contract and a predictive thing. It's very much I did not have sex with that woman kind of semantics.
Right.
You know, so we're trying to, they're parsing their words very carefully. But yes, you can bet. Because you are betting.
Mm-hmm.
You're
betting.
You're placing a wager.
You're betting to win money.
Right. So you can do it for everything. Everything. And that's why we're coming into, we had the Special Forces soldier arrested last week.
Mm-hmm.
Because somehow he made a lot of money betting that Maduro would be out of Venezuela by a certain date.
Yeah.
And what do you know?
Turns out that I might have known a thing or two and actually cashed in fairly big on that one. So I don't know.
Which is probably what they're saying. Well, look, we are regulating. We're finding things, irregularities, but
it's weird. We also can't trace who those people are, how they're getting their information, and where the money is coming from. Weird. That's not really regulation in my book, but what do I know?
No. And it's because we know Attorney General Josh Call, he's not putting up with anything. He's filing lawsuits all the time.
Right.
So, all right, let him come, let him see. I would imagine maybe it's part of that intimidation move where you go, all right, well, we're going to sue you back. And, okay, sue me back.
More performance theater, perhaps.
It's all kabuki. This whole government is kabuki, which is a show, which leads us to showbiz, which leads us to Swipe or Stay. It's 6 degrees of Swipe or Stay. Here on Daybreak, I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is 7:22, and it is time for Swipe or Stay. This is where we put the politics aside for just a few minutes, and we talk a little bit more about pop culture with our senior producer, Frank. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And Jamie, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you have not read about any of the stories that we have today.
I actually haven't.
Why, did you make them up?
No, because it is a slow news day in pop culture. So,
I'm surprised to hear that. I saw a number of headlines this morning that I breezed right by. I didn't even read them, but I saw a name and I was like, nope.
I was tied up with so many things yesterday that I did not have a chance to even try to avoid anything. I just had to avoid everything. So I'm excited to hear what you have for us today.
Well, good. Everybody, welcome into Swipe or Stay. I'm going to read some pop culture headlines, and Jamie and Brian are going to have to decide to either stay and hear more or swipe on to the next one. In the event of a tie, producer Parker gets to be the tiebreaker. Story number one, pop star's ex-boyfriend speaks out to clear his name.
Oh, this could be a new
Normally, I would swipe on this, but since Frank said it was a slow day, I'm sure he doesn't have a lot on the bench. So I'm going to stay.
We'll stay on this one.
I don't want to
come on your pity stay.
Yeah, it's a pity stay. 100% pity stay.
We'll help you out today.
Thanks,
guys. Frank.
So we have finally heard from Barry Keoghan about his split with Sabrina Carpenter.
Ooh.
Now, Keoghan was accused of cheating on Sabrina. However, that was an unconfirmed rumor. And his accused side chick did make a video at that time denying it. However,
is that her official title?
The accused side chick?
Accused side piece.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
I think that's it.
All right.
So he just appeared on a podcast this past weekend and said, I'm not asking for people to become my fan and like me because that's not normal either, but I'm asking for people to stop assuming and also just stop jumping on this narrative and attacking me and dragging me down in any way you can, involving my parents who are no longer with me.
Wow.
Just absolutely disgusting and vile. There's videos on TikTok literally going, I hate him.
Wow.
I mean, he's got a point. Fans take
relax.
Things just a little too far.
The online bullying thing is a problem, right?
It is.
Other than like Justin Bieber, because we see this kind of fierce devotion from fans of Beyonce and Taylor Swift and Sabrina Carpenter. Do we see that for male celebrities? Are there groups of women who are that? Or men, fans, like, it doesn't matter.
I think there's a strong faction of people that right now, actually, this is a really good point you bring up, Brian. Right now, the internet's split between Michael Jackson defenders and people pointing out a lot of flaws with the new movie.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah.
Sure.
So that's one male artist. I think Chris Brown also has sector of fans that really defend him. But you're right. For the most part, male artists don't really get that. And Barry Keoghan's an actor. So
yeah.
I think
he's an actor.
People just disassociate him with his roles.
Back to Chris Brown, several years ago when that whole Rihanna dust up came and where she ended up with a black eye, it was appalling even then how many people defended him in that moment, saying that, you know, it she probably was to blame and, you know, he's got a temper and, you know,
crazy.
She shouldn't. It was so weird. I was like, okay. That was not the reaction I expected.
With the cancel culture in effect, you would think Chris Brown would be towards the top of that list. However,
right.
he's
nope.
going on tour with Usher right
yep.
now. So
there you go.
Lonely Island star reveals the SNL host that made him uncomfortable. Now, for those of you that don't know, the Lonely Island is a comedy troupe that did all the digital shorts during like the mid-2000s.
Oh, I like a good SNL story. I'll stay.
Yeah, I'll stay. Why not?
All right. Any guesses
on the
who
host
the host was?
That made the Lonely Island crew uncomfortable.
Yes.
The host.
It's got to be.
Wow.
It's got to be a.
Host
could be funky.
Yeah.
Emma Stone. I'll just say Emma Stone.
It is not Emma Stone.
Okay.
Jamie, any guesses?
Oh, gosh. No, I don't have any guesses.
All right. Well, Jorma Taccone, one of the boys of the popular Lonely Island comedy troupe, they're the guys that made I'm on a Boat, has revealed which host it was, and it was Kevin Spacey.
Oh,
I get it.
I forgot that he'd even hosted.
He didn't go into specifics about why he made him uneasy, but just said for some reason he felt the vibe was off.
I think we know. I don't think they need to give any details. If you've paid any attention to the Spacey story, you know why they were the vibe was off.
Right. As Jamie alluded to, Spacey's been tied to multiple sexual assault allegations over the years, though he was cleared in a 2023 criminal trial in London.
Still canceled, though.
Do we have time for one more,
yes,
Parker?
Yes, let's do one more, Frank.
Amazon looks to reboot The Apprentice.
Oh, God.
And they do have a host in mind.
All right. Listen, I'm going to stay just because, you know, I'm hooking Frank up. I don't like both of those
thanks,
names.
Man.
Amazon
thanks
or
for
The
doing
Apprentice.
Me a solid.
Parker is already in shambles today. I don't want him to make any hard decisions, so we'll stay.
Thank you.
So the Wall Street Journal has reported that Amazon is discussing a potential reboot of The Apprentice, the show once hosted by Donald Trump before becoming the president twice. Talks are reportedly in the early stages as the reboot isn't in active development. However, the person that they are eyeing for the role is Donald Trump Jr. To carry on in his father's footsteps.
Pass. Swipe.
I don't even
want to. You already said it.
I know. I want to go back. I want to retroactively go back and swipe.
I got
I don't want to hear that.
Why? Never mind.
Because why not? But we don't like Nepo babies. Just remember that. No Nepo babies.
Ugh. Wow.
Well,
that's
Frank.
That's Swiper State today, guys.
Thank you.
Because we're running out of time. You're
You've
welcome.
Left us with a horrible taste in our mouth.
I know. Cheers.
Enjoy your fancy coffee cup.
Get your pinky out.
All right.
There.
I will.
When we come back, we are going to relive the Supreme Court's decision yesterday with the senior director from the Center for American Progress. I'm Brian Noonan. She's Jamie Martinson. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning. Cooler temperatures today. Lots of sunshine, though. We'll take it because we can use a little dry out in the state of Wisconsin. It's 7:35 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And thanks for being here. I'm Brian Noonan. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court's conservative majority handed Republicans their biggest victory yet in the perpetual battle to control the House of Representatives and state houses across the country. The 6-3 ruling effectively gutted the Voting Rights Act's requirement that districts be drawn to give minority voters a chance to elect representatives of their choosing. Joining us now to discuss the court's decision and the impact it will have is Devin Ombres. He's Senior Director of Courts and Legal Policy for the Center for American Progress. Devin, thanks for being here this morning. We appreciate your time. Can you give us a little background on the case that led to the court's decision yesterday and the legal basis for the decision that they made?
Sure. Louisiana versus Calais has been going on for several years at this point. And the court actually heard the case last year and decided to punt again to this year with a new question. It came down because Louisiana, after the last census, redrew their districts in a way that a lower federal court found violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, because Louisiana has about 33% of their population are Black people. And they only had one district that was majority-minority controlled for Congress. And so the court said, this is unconstitutional under the Voting Rights Act. You have to redraw it. And so they redrew a second map. And about 3 years ago, this very Supreme Court said that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is constitutional. We're not going to rejigger the rules. And so based on that, that's why the map was redrawn to get a second majority-minority district. Three white people said that this is discriminatory against us and sued the state. The state defended it. Last year, they defended it. And then the court said, we're not going to rule on this. We're going to punt till next year, reworked the question and heard it again. And this time they said, oh, no, wait, even though the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is amended in 1982, says that it is discriminatory effect that matters, we're going to change all of the law, all of the originalist tinkering, all of our analysis on this, and say that you must prove discriminatory intent in drawing lines for congressional and state legislative maps and turn everything on its head, our originalism, the Constitution, the very law itself.
But Jamie, I'm sorry. Let me just jump in on this because if that's the case, who was being discriminated against in this Louisiana case? Those three people, and they were able to prove that. How do they prove that they're being discriminated against? Were they in those districts? This is what I don't get. For the Supreme Court to reverse themselves and show that there had to be intent to discriminate. Where was that intent?
They didn't even take up that question. They didn't even answer it on that question. And also, I'm 99.99999% sure that the Voting Rights Act wasn't written in a racially neutral manner. It was intended to prevent white folks from discriminating against black and brown folks. Right. So this is basically reversing every argument made under the 14th, 15th Amendments and the VRA. And these three white folks said, no, you're actually discriminating against us. But the court didn't even touch that in this decision. They said that Section 2 of the VRA does not require proportional representation. So even though more than a third of Louisiana's population is black, the VRA doesn't require that they have to have 2 out of 6 districts represented by districts where a majority of the voters or a large percentage of the voters are black. And therefore, the state can gerrymander based on politics, and race doesn't, they're almost saying that race doesn't matter anymore in gerrymandering. It's a very weird and technical decision, but they say that black people vote for Democrats, but we're gerrymandering on the basis of partisanship, not race. And therefore, the fact that they're black and vote for Democrats doesn't matter. We get to gerrymander anyway.
Devin, I want to take a step back for just a moment, because for anybody who's listening to this morning and completely appalled but doesn't really understand maybe the history or the context of this, explain to us in the simplest terms what essentially the Voting Rights Act did and why it started essentially. Because I think that's being missed for a lot of people in some of this, because this Louisiana case has been going on for so long at this point.
Yeah. I mean, so the Voting Rights Act was passed in the 1960s because black people in the South were incredibly discriminated against post-Reconstruction with Jim Crow. I think in Mississippi, 6% of the black population was registered to vote. And there were poll taxes, there was violence, there was blatant discrimination. And Congress finally said, we recognize that this is a major problem and we need to fix it. And so they created Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act that said that required districts that had previously discriminated against to draw lines that were racially appropriate, so that black people and brown people could have a chance of electing their preferred representative. And that got struck down 10 years ago. Justice Roberts wrote the opinion on that. And at the time, Justice Ginsburg said, you're throwing away your umbrella in the rain. This has worked. This has worked. And we're getting rid of it. And that's exactly what they're doing again. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act has allowed representation, allowed black and brown people to vote for the people they prefer. And this is, again, throwing the umbrella out in the rain, because it is projected that Southern states could redraw up to 25 black and brown majority districts out of Congress. They could draw out over 191 state legislative districts, and they can do it in ways that they say that this Supreme Court now says, if you say it's based on partisanship and not on race, that is perfectly permissive. And the only way that you can prove that it's a violation of Section 2 is if somebody writes an email that says, we are only doing this based on race. That's the only thing that will allow or that will prove evidence that violates Section 2. It's just absolutely wild.
If they're redrawing it allegedly on just partisanship, how do you account for people of the other party in that state who now have no representation, whether they're black or white. If you're in a Republican state and they're drawing all the districts to favor Republicans, where's someone supposed to go if they live in that state?
Well, the Supreme Court 4 or 5 years ago in a case called Rucho said that partisan gerrymandering, though unconstitutional, is not justiciable, which means we can't touch it. We're not allowed to discuss it. So the only way to overcome that is just sheer masses to the polls. And let's see, Louisiana has already delayed their primaries based on the decision yesterday so that they can redraw their maps. Florida passed yesterday.
Yes, they were ready.
Passed. They were ready.
They drew four Democrats out of Congress.
Oh my gosh.
Yesterday. But the kicker is, I think you've seen some discussion about this. It's called dummy mandering, where you draw so many seats in your favor that it dilutes even your voting base, and you could end up losing more seats than you intended. So I think there is a concern among folks in Texas. There is a concern among Republicans in Florida that these new districts are so skewed as to really limit the voting base in those states and in potential wave years, which 2026 could be, as gas is now passing $4.50 a gallon and companies are getting billions of dollars in tariff rebates, but the American people are not, that people are fed up and independents could break the opposite way. And you could see a very, very high turnout among Democrats and it could end up backfiring. So, I mean, that's the hope, but it takes a lot more effort to overcome that when you have to overcome 3-4 point deficits in every district, as opposed to actually having districts where there's a battle of ideas and people get to select their representatives rather than representatives getting to select their voters.
Which is exactly
what's happening now.
We're talking with Devin Ombres. He is the Senior Director of Courts and Legal Policy for the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, if you want to check out some of his work. We're already seeing this tit for tat in redistricting, right? We've seen this nationally. Is this, in your opinion, going to, and you already mentioned Florida being on the ready yesterday. We've talked a bit about some of the other states. How is this going to accelerate that trend? And for the midterms coming up in November, some states are probably somewhat safe. But what does this look like beyond for 2028's presidential election in your mind?
So for folks way smarter than me have already opined on this, but for 2026, Georgia, Tennessee, potentially Missouri could redraw. For most of the other states, it would require rerunning an election, and that's going to be a hot mess if that happens.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really hard to do. But in 2028, in 2030, it is going to really skew the way that Congress is made up, because it's going to give all the other southern states the ability to redraw. And then you're going to see a race on the left in blue states to completely redraw. And I think we could all just disarm. Democrats in Congress have been pushing for a national ban on partisan gerrymandering for a decade. I wrote about this a decade ago and how it can actually be functionalized. All the Democrats have voted for it. They've been putting it up a long time ago. The Republicans have not. And it would be nice to be able to see a real battle of ideas rather than a battle of who can draw the best maps. So it's really going to screw up congressional representation and state legislative representation, especially in the South, moving forward.
So before we let you go, Devin, to make that happen, what you said, the federal ban against gerrymandering, it would just take some Republicans to come over and vote for it along with the Democrats. That it's the blueprint is in place to change this, so we can put an end to all this.
It's been in place for a long time, but you need some bipartisan support, especially in the Senate. Yeah. And folks in the Senate recognize that they have that, you know, it's in their own interest not to do it, because power seeks power, and that's what they're doing.
What do we have for time here, Parker?
We've got about a minute.
About a minute left. I don't want to throw a big question at you, Devin, but with about that minute left, what is a misconception right now as people listen to this coverage and how this plays out? What is some sort of misconception that you want to make sure people understand about what's happening right now that maybe they're not getting the full grasp of right now?
Sure. I think the one thing that people need to understand is that this Supreme Court is incredibly partisan, and Justice Roberts and Justice Alito have been fighting their entire careers to end the Voting Rights Act. And that the only way out of this, the only way to actually bring about a stable, multicultural, and true democracy is Supreme Court reforms. That's where we need to be looking. Supreme Court reforms 100%. And I think gerrymandering, there's two original sins in this country, slavery, gerrymandering. You get rid of gerrymandering and a lot of things improve.
Well, Devin, thanks so much for joining us. Devin Ombres is the Senior Director of Courts and Legal Policy at Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Have a great day, Devin. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:52 right now. We hope that you are having a great Thursday morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. What do you look forward most to at the state fair as far
food.
As what you're eating and drinking? Yes, that is the key. There are so many treats. And yesterday, the state fair rolled out their finalist for the Sporkies and Drinkies.
Love it.
And if you're new to Wisconsin and you maybe say, what? Sporkies and Drinkies are the highlighted award-winning food and drinks. Sporks, you know, because you use a spork.
Right.
And drink. If I have to explain what drinky means to you, I don't want to hang out with you. You and I are not going to be friends. But the four drinkies and eight Sporky finalists are from a wide collection of vendors, both new to the state fair and returning contenders. The winner will be chosen by a panel of local celebrity judges on August 4th. One day I hope to be part of that panel.
Sounds like a dream gig, doesn't it?
It sounds great. And it's not just for bragging rights. They say, according to the longtime MC from WISN 12 TV in Milwaukee, it can bring in as much as $150,000 in surge business for the place that wins in the Sporkies and Drinkies. And I always try, because all the years I've been working in Wisconsin, I always then try to find the Sporkies and Drinkies when
I
get to the fair.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's super fun.
Because I've made my
list.
It's
like a mission. It's like a scavenger hunt at that point.
Yes. And I'm always looking. So there's some good ones, Jamie.
Do you have, I know we're going to talk about this list, but just going off of what we have, starting with the Sporkies, was there one of these that just caught your attention and already you're like, oh, I am on a hunt come fair time?
Yes, I want the Bayou Crunch Cup
from
the Exotic Meat Grill. It's fries, Cajun coleslaw, and alligator nuggets with breaded crawfish bites and a whole crawfish.
That sounds amazing.
I love to suck the head, Parker. That's a term, not a euphemism. That's a real term.
It is a real term.
If you eat crawfish, you know. Yes. Anybody who's had crawfish or mud bugs, you know you suck the head.
I'm just looking at his face.
I don't think you
ever
can
seen
say
a crawfish.
That on the radio.
You can, because
that's
what you do.
Term.
You break the crawfish in half.
Yeah. I understand.
You eat the meat out of the tail.
You
and
suck what's out of the head.
Yes.
Then you suck the juice out the head.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
All right.
I'm learning.
Your day has been in shambles already. You're living in a box. You're covering up windows with cardboard. And now you're learning about craw.
Now you're afraid that I've violated FCC rules, which I have not. I was not saying that for prurient interests. I was saying that because that's how you eat crawfish. I also want to get the El Pastor pizza.
Pizza. No, I was looking at that too. That sounds amazing. Yeah. I'm always going to go with something a little bit more sweet. So I looked right away at the sweet lemon berry cheese curds from the Saz's Barbecue. Ellsworth Creamery white cheddar cheese curds fried and tossed in a cinnamon sugar mix before being finished with a sweet raspberry sauce and a side of sweet lemon zest cream whip, which, hello, that sounds amazing. That's like savory and dessert all in one. I can get down with that.
That does sound really good, and I'm going to wash it down with a Tilta Spirits old-fashioned sipper club offering. It's ruby, grapefruit, and key lime juices combined with ginger beer and finished in a smoke box with hickory and torched
that
rosemary.
That sounds amazing.
Sounds very good, doesn't it?
It does sound very, very good. I also think the hot honey chicken lemonade from deep fried mashed potatoes on a stick sounds really good.
So hungry.
Lemonade sweetened with Mike's hot honey and garnished with two chicken nuggets for your drinking pleasure.
Not one, but two.
Well, this is nice because then maybe you've had Sporkies and Drinkies all day, but you're still a tiny bit peckish while you're thirsty. You go, I have a beverage and a small snack.
Yes.
And I can now make my way to the end.
You're
going to
love this. Mr. Plow King chiming in on our YouTube chat says, these options sound way better than the bowl of mini wheats I'm having for breakfast.
Yeah, Mr. Plow King, I don't doubt it. And that's no shade on your mini wheats.
I love some mini wheats.
A Tingo Tango Chicharrón,
right?
Which is crispy honey habanero pork rinds topped with chicken tinga, pickled red onions, queso fresca, cajeta cheese, sweet and spicy candied jalapenos, and French cilantro.
Or how about some a cookie butter coffee float, vanilla ice cream with cookie butter infused iced coffee combined in a Biscoff cookie rimmed cup and then topped with cookie butter drizzle and a Biscoff cookie. I mean, come on. That Biscoff cookies are amazing. I love them on my Delta flights, but like that, come on, I'm down.
There's a lot of in the Sporkies, a lot of focus on sort of Mexican or South American food, which
I
like.
Too.
My only fear is 100 degree day at the fair, eating a lot of spicy foods.
You're going to be really sweaty.
It's going to be it could be uncomfortable.
That's why you go in the evening, right? Like go in the evening, sun starts to set, then it's not quite as sweaty. It's still a little warm, so you still feel like you can go get your Tilt-A-Spirits from the Sipper Club. But at the same time, it's not quite as sweaty because the sun's not beating down on you. You got to plan these things out.
I'm going to bring up one more Sporky that's going to have Parker panicked. Deep fried horchata balls from Badger Bites. The description is, Parker, these balls are
amazing.
Topped with cinnamon sugars, drizzled with dulce de leche sauce and chocolate sauce before being topped with mini chocolate chips, toasted coconut, and sweet fried plantain chips.
Oh, boy.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm in.
Parker, have you been to the state fair?
I've actually not, no.
Oh, my God.
What? How have I? Listen. What? All right, we need an outing
field
to the
trip.
State. The state fair is unbelievably
We're
going to
go
fun.
Find every single one of these Sporkies and Drinkies just for you, Parker, and then we're going
to
make you suck
the
head.
I approve.
Over 30 years.
Then we're going to make you suck the head of the crawfish.
All right. And I'll have some of the, what are they, badger, what? Badger bites?
Yeah,
the
first you got to suck the heads
because
those are spicy, and then you eat the deep fried balls
because
they're sweet.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
It sounds very good.
Right.
I am hungry now.
Are you still with
I
it?
Am hungry
Do,
now
are
too.
You still afraid of our FCC compliance this morning?
Usually.
Okay. He has no faith in us.
On my end, it's well placed. Yours, I don't know why he doubts you, but we'll see what happens. Hour three coming up. So if you're listening on WMDX, sayonara, suckers. No, we miss you. We want you to stay with us. We'd like you to follow us on the free Civic Media app or YouTube or Facebook. So you could do that. If not, enjoy Stephanie Miller, and we will talk to you tomorrow, but we'll talk to everybody else after the news. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. 7:59. This is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.